Welcome to Bell Folks Stuff, an experimental podcast where I talk to interesting folks about really important stuff that they enjoy doing. Let's get started. Hey folks, it's time for another episode of Bell Folks Stuff. Tonight I am joined by a very special guest, one that I had in the back of my head from the moment I started this little adventure. I just kind of wanted to get a couple out before grabbing her. So tonight I am joined by the godmother of Faf, the mistress behind Alternative Chat. So how are you doing tonight?
Good evening. I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Doing good. It's actually a lie because it's evening for you, but it's day for me. But
well, it's dark. You know, we'll take it from there. It's not a problem.
I don't know why. For some reason, saying tonight just sounds better than this morning.
Well, it's because it's nice. It's almost Christmas. You can feel it in the air around here, actually, and it's lovely. It's that kind of sort of nip in the air now. So
it's
sitting here in the dark is lovely.
Yeah, we've had Thanksgiving, and it's like a switch gets thrown. And all of a sudden, every store starts playing Christmas music, and yeah, the world is Christmas all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, we haven't put our tree up yet, so actually Christmas hasn't started, rest of the world. We're going to do ours next week, so I know lots of people have kind of dived in early, but it's lovely at this time of the year. I was born in October, and this season is always my favorite.
I've always been a big fan of fall. We're having weird weather patterns here. Like, it's been 20, 30 degrees during the week, Fahrenheit. And all of a sudden yesterday, it was like 60, 70 degrees Fahrenheit for the last 2 days. And then it's supposed to drop back down into the 20s. So it's really confusing whether or not it's really winter.
It's interesting because looking at the trees as I was going out this morning, there's still a lot of leaves on trees this part of the world, which seems quite odd for early December. So I think this is probably the long-standing legacy of global warming that we're now beginning to realize that actually it is warmer overall.
Yeah,
it doesn't actually, you know, feel that way, but I think the trees know better than we do. They've been doing it longer than we have, you see.
Well,
so I'm going to take their view as being perhaps more accurate than everybody else's.
And we didn't even really start to get color change here until, I don't know, a few weeks ago, and then all of a sudden they're all gone because of the crazy wind we've had.
Yeah, that's it. Once the wind comes in, that's it. And it is. It's odd because there's one big tree I pass on the way to school with my youngest every day. And that's still completely covered in leaves until about a week ago. And I can't remember. I think there's something on YouTube. There's an animation about, you know, first leaf falls off a tree and then they all fall off at once. And it was literally just like that. Overnight, this tree goes from being completely covered in leaves to nothing at all. So yeah, it's strange, but we've been promised some very, very cold weather because the wind blows over from Eastern Europe. That's right in the arse, and it can get very unpleasant around here. So it's due. I'm kind of waiting for the inevitable now.
Yeah, I'm expecting this week is going to be rough here. And I think there's even talk of maybe some ice because we don't really get snow here. I don't know if you get snow, but We get ice. We get like sheets of ice that are like an inch or two of ice coating everything.
Well, where we live geographically, we're quite close to the Thames estuary. And anybody who did geography in their young years will know that estuaries tend to sort of have their own microclimate, which means we have these absolutely fantastic electrical storms during the summer. And they really are massive, you know, stuff appears over the estuary and suddenly, you know, it can be really nice 15 minutes down the road, and here it's throwing it down. The last couple of years I've got some nice pictures, actually. One of the things I do when I'm not playing is take pictures, and I've got some nice sort of wintry type scenes, and it's been a while since we've had a major snowfall. And of course, now touch wood, I'm not going to say it. the heavens are now going to open and we're going to get deluge, but we don't traditionally, because we're coastal. It's colder in the summer and warmer in the winter. I think that's the way it works. So we don't necessarily get a lot of snow, but it this time of the year, it just the cold. I just like the cold. It's nice to be able to sort of wrap up and sort of I walk a lot, and sort of cover yourself up in 6 or 7 layers and just go out and walk and enjoy the world for what it is. And I'm not a big hot weather person. I like the cold. So it's nice to be able to go out and just sort of wrap yourself up warm.
I think about my ultimate climate would be 50 to 60 Fahrenheit, which I have no clue what.
As well. Yes, kind of.
I mean, I love fall. Like, it's my favorite time of year when you can comfortably put on a jacket and run around and be perfectly fine. But, I mean, I live, you know, in Oklahoma, where during the summer it gets up to 115 at times, and it's insane. And nobody should have to live in that kind of weather.
Hey, but you get Hugh Jackman singing songs about you. We don't get that kind of stuff going on. But having said that, there are a couple of there's a couple of sort of really notoriety local bands around this part of the world. But you have Hugh Jackman with the winds, you know, sailing down a plane or whatever it is that he does in Oklahoma. So that's good.
Yeah, like, that's the one thing everyone knows about Oklahoma. And it's always been funny to me, talking to people online, is so much of the world thinks we still live in teepees. So,
you know, I mean, the racial stereotypes, talking as an Essex girl, anybody who knows, you know, the United Kingdom, if you mention I come from Essex, I have racial stereotypes following me around. I have, you know, sexual stereotypes. This is how people equate themselves to the world. And you can tell a person's age, I think, quite interestingly, with the number of kind of things that they will do that. But I'm a big musical fan, so that's my excuse.
Well, I think a lot of times it's almost like a shorthand. Like, it's not necessarily that they believe these things, but it's become a shorthand for referring to a certain area of the world.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so I am always, like, at a loss of whether to call you Godmother or Alternative Chat or just Alt.
Just call me Alt for the sake of
okay.
Yeah, because the Godmother thing sort of started off as a joke. Because when I kind of consider myself in my head as being Godmother, I always kind of think of sparkly DMs and a tutu. I'm not putting a horse's head in your bed or, you know, hanging around with Robert De Niro. I'd never kind of looked at it that way, and people tend to do it both sides. And once I started with Alternative Chat on Twitter, that seems to be the way that lots of people associate me, because I have a brand and I have my little logo, and everybody sort of seems to pick that up. So that's kind of where it's stuck. But I'll answer to anything as a rule, whatever you want. I don't mind.
So, okay, you kind of prefaced that. How did the whole Godmother thing start? You know, like, give us the 500-foot view of it.
Oh, God. I've been doing this stuff online for a very, very long time. We're talking kind of early 90s when I started off my journey onto the internet via Usenet. And I've done all sorts of things, some I'm proud of, some I'm not. And the whole Godmother thing was a way of me just trying to find a way of associating myself with all the characters that I'd picked up in Warcraft. I've written a lot of blogs over the years on various subjects. And I tried, oh God, this is going to be what, 5, nearly 6 years ago now, to get myself to a point where I wasn't just writing on a blog, you know, today I did this with my character. I found myself wanting to sort of explore things with a bit more detail and a bit more depth. And because I was playing with so many people at that point, I kind of wanted an overview of all of it. So I started off as a godmother to all my characters. That's the way initially that name appeared. And it's kind of linked to a lot of my very early stuff. And when you look around what's on the internet, you'll see it kind of appears. But once I started sort of getting more and more into the sort of bigger discussions about things, I wanted to sort of, it wasn't really fit for purpose, because I wasn't just talking about my alts anymore. I was talking about everything in Warcraft, and I was talking about subjects that would come up as a result of Warcraft. And so the whole Alternative Chat thing was born, because that was what I picked up. Alternative was initially the name of my website, and then the chat bit got stuck underneath just over a year ago when I started doing my podcast, and it sort of devolved from that. But that little logo that I have, the alt with a semicolon, semicolon, was it? It's a colon, it's not a semicolon.
Yeah, I think it's a colon.
So I'm just... slight moment of blonde here. I've been editing stuff all weekend and I've completely lost the plot. Yeah, so that logo is sort of me now. When I go anywhere, if you see me out and about, you'll see I have a messenger bag with that on, and that tends to be my little identifier. And that's how it's kind of now moved to. So my brand, if you like, has evolved in the coming up for 6 years that I've been writing. And now we find ourselves sort of stuck at Orton. Her godmother has become sort of, she still gets, that term still gets used. That's still what gets linked into my podcast feed every week. But I've kind of moved a bit now from where I started to where I am now. And it's just this sort of gradual process of evolution that's gone on over almost 6 years.
Well, and brands are such a weird thing anyway, because you kind of control them, but at the same time, it's the community ultimately that links back to you and refers to you as things that kind of dictate how you're known.
It's interesting to see how people associate it with me and me with it now. Whereas I know some people change Twitter avatars like on a weekly basis. I feel kind of tied to my brand now, which is kind of odd, but it isn't, because that is what people associate with me. Now, I had a little bit of a brand safari in November, and there will be a few more in December as well. I was mucking around with the way I sort of present it, but it is still basically the same, you know, it's still the same layout, however it is. Now, I like being consistent. Excuse me, I'm not saying that people aren't consistent if they, you know, change their stuff every X days. I completely understand how that works. But for me, it has become a sort of badge of honor. I like being what I am. And I like kind of pushing the envelope a bit with it. And I like playing around with it. And I like the idea of people knowing that's me, even though it may not look exactly like me. And in that regard, it's kind of a bit of just me taking the piss out of myself sometimes. And mucking around with what I know tends to happen a lot online. When I before I had my kids, I was quite heavily into marketing and design and things like that. And that whole ethos of the brand is something that I think a lot of people get very lost in and get very kind of obsessed with. And I like the fact that I have it, but I also like the fact that I take the mick out of it when I need to. But it just presents for people, it is different. There are very few people on Twitter who go that route, especially with gaming, because, you know, if you have an avatar of Mass Effect 3 and then you change and go and play Destiny, you know, your Mass Effect 3 logo isn't relevant. You want to change. I have a kind of big umbrella of everything that I do under this one name. And I like that, because that allows me a freedom that I think perhaps sometimes other people don't have, which seems a bit strange. But you see, I'm not restricted then by anything else other than what I decide is the restriction. So even though many, many people know me as being ostensibly a Warcraft blogger, I do lots of other things. And the people who know me well will understand that it's kind of it's a coverall. It's not me specifically pinning myself to a particular flag or in a particular place.
Well, and that's one of the things that's always seemed natural about the stuff you do is, you know, your blog is about you, kind of like my blog is about me, that you may be focused on a specific thing, but ultimately, if you're going to follow either of our blogs for very long, you're going to care about me or you, the person behind the screen, more than, you know, what we're actually writing. Or at least that's my take on it. And
that's interesting that you say that, actually. Because I never really got that back in the beginning when I started doing this. I never really sort of equated that people would care. I was literally just doing it as a way to explain, you know, in my own mind what was going on. And once it was apparent that I had an audience, I've not ever really kind of stopped being that. You know, I've never found the need to target myself in any way. Like you said, I think people just getting to know me, it's kind of me just, it's exactly like I'm doing here. It's me talking, I'm somebody listening. And that for me is very, very natural to do. But I'd never really grasped the depth of the feedback. And it's only when I've started actually sort of letting my guard down, which I suppose I have in the last 6 months or so, that I've begun to understand that actually, blimey, people actually care. What's this about? This is a bit strange.
Well, it's so weird too, because like most of the time, I don't know if you're this way as well, but most of the time I feel like I'm just talking to myself. Like, yeah, I am putting together a post and I am talking to myself and I'm going to do it whether or not anybody's ever going to read it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then something happens and it pulls you back from that line of thought. And like for me, the first time it happened was the first morning something happened that caused me to miss a post. Like, I didn't actually miss a post that day, but I was significantly later than normal. And all of a sudden, my Twitter feed was full of people posting, are you okay? Did something happen? What's wrong? And it didn't dawn on me that there's all these silent voices that never actually take the time to comment or interact, but are still along with you on this journey every single day. Yes. And you can't read someone, you know, 365 days a year and not be into the person more than the thing they're talking about.
I think sometimes that it's quite easy to lose yourself in the way this works. I know lots of people who live their Twitter lives quite vicariously and are clearly very, very aware a lot of the time about how people react to them and how people respond to what happens. And I know, I mean, I could name everybody who I don't post, you know, first name terms probably for a lot of them, people who'll pop up and say, oh, you're all right, have you not done anything? And my modus operandi for this, and it will carry on until I suspect I'm just incapable of keeping track of everything. The people that matter in this entire equation are not vocal, but they are always there. It's like a persistent background sort of noise. Not noise in a bad way, it's noise in a good way. And I can hear those people all the time during a day if I'm doing something or I'm looking at Twitter or I'm, you know, wherever I might be. Those people are always there in the background. And I make a very strong policy, and I kind of quite rigidly as well. For me to follow you, I need to come to the table with a relationship. Myself, it's strange. You know, this is the 21st century and all that's not how it works per se, but actually it is, because for me it is much for me about how other people respond back to me. And this has been mentioned by a couple of people that I know, that I tend to use Twitter as a writing prompt, and I have done for probably the best part of 2 or 3 years now. So I will have a discussion about a subject with the people who are on Twitter at that point in time. And I will take elements of that and I will then go away and I will then sit and consider it. And then I'll add my own comments into it. And then I'll recycle the whole thing. And then I'll come up with a post. And I'm told, and I always say this is not me because I never know whether it's good or not, I am told by people that some of the best work that I've is when I've been able to sort of divide and separate everything that has happened over a particular contentious subject, distill it from the conversations that I've had with other people and place it as a final form in a blog post. Now, Twitter is a unique way, I think, for a writer to be able to take a subject matter and explore it in a way that perhaps wouldn't necessarily happen if you were sitting on your own. Now, I've read your blog and I know you do this as well. I know that you take elements from outside of your particular set, where you are, what you're doing. You pick stuff up. And I think the best writing is when you can use 6 or 7 different points of reference, make a point from all of them, but still be able to come up with a balanced argument at the end of it. And I think good blogging, at least as far as I'm concerned, isn't necessarily taking the first most popular opinion and just regurgitating it. I think good blogging is when you're able to take all the arguments and have a place for them all and come up with a piece of writing that covers the concept rather than just a part of the concept. And I think that's quite difficult to do sometimes. There's a lot of very emotive subjects when I write that become quite difficult to isolate and break down. And my problem is I will get overly emotional about things sometimes, and it becomes incredibly difficult to divide and separate everything in a rational way. And this is something that I found particularly with podcasting, that if I have a face on about something, I can't sit down and podcast about it, because I know I'm just going to, everything that's there is just going to leach through me, and people are going to be able to see straight through what I've done. To actually find the way to be objective is really, really difficult sometimes. And I love the way that Twitter gives me 6 or 7 different points of view often about something. And then it's up to me to sort of take everything and sit there and go, right, okay, where does all this fit? So it's this lovely jigsaw puzzle on a daily basis. And I honestly wouldn't be without it now. I absolutely adore even the bad days, even when people are at each other's throats and telling each other to fuck off. I love days like that. I love when there's a real passion in things. I think that's the key, because you may notice that I get quite passionate about stuff. And I think that is the key to it all. And people can see, people can see straight through you if you try and be something that you're not. And for me, I think as long as I can be fair, and as long as I can remain passionate,
I have to say, I am absolutely jealous of how passionate you have managed to remain about World of Warcraft.
Ah, well.
I am straight up jealous about it, because, like, I come and go. Like, right now, I have fallen into a WoW-shaped hole and had a full relapse. And
I noticed that from a man who said he wasn't going to get involved. This is quite interesting.
It was the documentary. I swear, it got me, and it got Syl, and it got, like, Kodomi, and a handful of other people.
I think you'll find that was the general idea of making
I figure
place,
it was,
actually.
But that documentary was so packed full of feels that it was like sucker punch straight to the gut. Aw, now I care again. And yeah, like, if you had talked to me a week before that documentary came out, I was full on, I am going to pass on Warlords. And then the documentary happened, and so much of a nostalgia upwelling that I'm back, and I am loving it for the time being, and I'm embracing the fact that I'm loving it for the time being, and I'm just not going to worry about whether I'll love it in 2 weeks.
I think in terms of the way the game is and the way people are playing it, right? Now there are some fuses already lit. There are some explosions that are going to happen down the road. I can tell you now exactly where they are and what's going to happen with them when the raiding hits again next week, which we do. We get high more than a second. Once we get back into the process of killing things with there being who's going to get there first, I think after that settles excuse me, it will become one of those things that it will go back to you being love or hate on it. I think that I still don't think there's a middle ground for Warcraft for a lot of people. I think that I always use the metaphor of the evangelical ex-smoker who gave up and now will never touch a cigarette ever again, and who will tell anybody within a 30-mile radius that they are evil and you should never smoke them and just don't ever touch it. Just walk away and don't ever do it. And it is like that. It is crack. And people get very, 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 very kind of obsessed on little things, on details, on bits that other people can't see. And one of my dearest friends in game currently, who is the guy who edits Azeroth in 5 for me, made a comment to me back in the early days when we kind of were first getting to know each other, that I'm very good at actually being not like that, but like that. So I can play and I can get very kind of into the whole thing and I can get very, very obsessed with it, but I have this sort of ability to sort of step back a bit from it. And I learned that the hard way. I had my addictive period. And I got better with help. And it's not just that, it was everything. And when you know you are an addict, the lovely thing about there's an episode of The West Wing that I always come back to this, which is when Leo McGarry tells Josh Lyman the story about the guy in the hole. You always know where the hole is, and you always know where you're going to fall if you walk into the hole, and the only problem is ever, you know, getting out again. You either spend your whole time in the hole, or you just, you know, you accept what you are, and, you know, you just walk around it and you don't go there. And I think for a lot of people now who have come into the game, who perhaps, you know, did exactly what you did and thought, oh, this is really good, I'm going to try it again. There is this lovely, beautiful, rose-coloured honeymoon period where all the stuff that is in the game, which is deliberately meant to remind you of TBC, which is deliberately meant to remind you of everything that you played, you know, however many years ago it was, the music, the looks, the items, everything is there doing one job and one job only to remind you how great things were. Now, whether it's any good now... People are playing this game like we've been here for 3 months. Can I point out that it's not actually been 4 weeks yet?
Oh, yeah.
People are talking about this game as if we've been here 3 months. And there is this kind of odd space-time continuum thing going on currently that people don't know where they are. You're still back in TBC.
Because very much so.
And lots of people are in TBC. There are people who obviously never were in TBC who are thinking, God, why wasn't it like this in Cataclysm? This is great! And, you know, the timeline itself has been deliberately skewed by Blizzard for lots and lots of different reasons. For the benefit of nostalgia, for the benefit of trying to make people deliberately forget how bad some of the last two expansions has been, to try and just reinvent what it is. But the truth is, nobody actually knows quite what it is anyway, I think now. And it's interesting watching people on their little honeymoon periods. And, you know, people like you, people I know who haven't played for a very long time, doing things and it becoming this new, beautiful, you know, fabulous experience for you. When you're always here, let me just tell you that an awful lot has changed. Perhaps even more hasn't, and that for me is more concerning in the short term than, you know, the number of new people that are around. Because once you work out that this isn't as great as you thought it was, and you will, trust me on this, we all could be in a bit of trouble. We'll have to see how it goes.
And that's part of it as well. Like, for me, it's a big dose of TBC nostalgia, but it's also a big dose of, here are all these people that I have not seen since the launch of Pandaria. You know, there's a wave of people that consistently come back, and part of the honeymoon period is getting to hang out with those people that left the game and are now back for however long they're back. But the problem is, so much of the experience for me is wrapped up in the people that I'm playing with.
That's the key, I think, between you and me, because actually, I'm with a completely different set of people again. This time, there is a core of us who have remained in our guild for a decade now, but the kind of subsidiary secondary circle is completely new, and it was actually quite off-putting for me in the first week or so of the expansion. I didn't know anybody. It was really strange, and I take a very, very long time to kind of get comfortable and feel relaxed with people that I don't know. So for me, it was actually quite a jolt. And although, see, the thing is, all these people are coming back. None of these people are new. All these people have played before, but they've played in different places with other people. So
yeah.
Even though there is this shared consciousness of all things WoW, the actual people to me are a complete mystery. Now, I suspect that if I were in your position and all the people that I was playing with in TBC turned up, I'm not sure what I'd do with myself, frankly. I'm not sure how I'd actually equate what I was seeing with what I'm doing. And I think that's a key difference with how people play games anyway, because you have a very socially orientated ethos in what you do. I mean, with the Alliance of Awesome, all those things, it's a different sort of base starting point. I've always been traditionally quite a loner. I've always been traditionally quite difficult to sort of get to know people. And I'm quite cagey and quite cautious. So for somebody like me, it isn't about that experience to start with. It's about, well, how do I adjust to all you people who just, you know, buggered back in? You know, you all buggered off. You know, I stay. I've always been here. And it's like being mum when all your kids, go off and go to college. You're still there. You don't leave. All these people come and go around you, and that's a very different experience to the experience I think that you're dealing with at the moment.
Okay, so I'm curious: is there any bitterness towards the people that go away and come back, and go away and come back, and go away and come back?
No, not at all. And I'm going to be honest, because it I have a basic love of the nuts and bolts of things. I love to sort of kick back and grind. I love to achieve things. I love to just sit in games sometimes and look at stuff, which may seem very strange to some people. But I use this as direct inspiration for what I do. And anybody who's currently stuck into my original fiction that I'm doing is going to be very able to see the connections between the stuff that's happened in game and the stuff that I'm writing about. And actually, as a backdrop, it's very useful to have. It's kind of a way of taking my mind out of the real world and putting it somewhere else and having the sort of a background to work from. But I can't feel anything bitter at all from people who need to do other things. I don't need anything else, which, yeah, that's true. I'm not one of these people who has to have a new game every week or has to try a different experience every week. I'm quite traditional and I'm quite settled in the way I do things. My difference is I'll read, or I watch a movie, or I go and walk, or I write. So my kind of escape from this is I just go somewhere else entirely, and this is my game now. And I've done that because I am an obsessive person. And I know that if I didn't do that, my family would never see me again. I mean, it's like when the new Civ came out and my husband very kindly let me have a day where nobody hassled me and I just got to play it through once. And at the end of that, I got myself up from the computer and turned around and said, you know what? I can't play this again, because if I play it again, I will not get up. And it's knowing what you're like as a person. And knowing that sometimes it is just sensible to walk away from something and not just do it. And that for me is how it works. But Warcraft has always been my sort of the equivalent of, my guilty sweet snack in a day if I'm on a diet, or my treat at the end of the week if I'm, being really good, or like having a, glass of wine. It's that kind of sort of something special. And it's always been like that. And once I started writing about it, I felt that it's going to go one of two ways eventually. I'm going to get to the point where I either have nothing else to say, and if I have nothing else to say, I will stop. And until that point is reached, I'm just going to keep going, because there is something about continuity like that which I find comforting, and I've always found that. I've always found that having a sort of a continuous background is something that's quite stabilizing. And I like the idea of, in all of this, watching everybody else go off and play other things and come back and whatever, being there actually is a comfort in itself. So no, I can't be bitter at anybody. You've all got far more interesting, sensible and far less addictive personalities than I have, and as a result you can go and do all this stuff, so go and do it. Because
I wouldn't say that I have less of an addictive personality. I just find I'm addicted to the people. And I go off and follow groups of people. And that's honestly, I was raised an only child, and I have always tried to gather as many people around me as possible. But then when I have them, I don't know what to do with them. So it's been weird, because coming back to WoW this time, there is the core group of people that is the same, and there are all these people that have gone off that are the same, but there was this entire ecosystem that evolved between last September, November-ish. Actually, no, I the last time I quit was in April of this year. So between April and coming back for Warlords, there's all these new people that showed up. So I've had this, renaissance of meeting these new people that I didn't already know and incorporating them into my worldview, and people that I enjoyed playing with. So yeah, it's been weird.
I'm quite used to not playing with anybody else for quite long periods of time, and there was a because, you know, we've had a year with nothing new before Warlords came along. They were quite long periods where it'd just be me online in the guild and nobody else. And I suppose that kind of makes you slightly antisocial, but I don't crave that social side of stuff perhaps as much as other people do. But I do appreciate the fact that, you know, people are there and people want to talk to you. And I try not to be antisocial as a rule. But I am a bit of a miserable old sod sometimes, and it does tend to show through. But I've sort of made a conscious decision to myself that I've got very emotionally attached to people in the game over the years, and inevitably I'll get, you know, somebody who I really enjoy playing with, or somebody who inspires me, and off they'll go because they decided they don't want to play anymore. And I've had quite a lot of quite painful experiences over the years with people who I've got very strong bonds with, who just vanish. And they literally do just vanish, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, if you want to leave, the last thing you want to do is kind of say goodbye to people in situations like this, want to go. And I think it's down to people and personalities that I tend to get very upset about people who I lose. And I can sit and I can name a dozen people who have been very influential on the way I've played the game and the way I've matured as a person and online, who are no longer with us, and I have no idea where they are, for whatever reason. And it's the way this game plays is different for different people, and I think this is something that lots of people don't actually grasp, that there are emotional depths to it that perhaps if you just, you know, consider this as something that you do, not an experience, you just won't get. And that, I think that's the big key between, I mean, we're both actually probably the same basic kind of person, but we just approach it from very, very different sides. This whole community thing is all very well and good, but you've got to want to be a part of it. And a lot of people turn up, take what they need, and they leave, because that's how life works. And
yeah.
I think people tend to forget this, that, you know, metaphors for life are littered everywhere. But it does work along the lines that if you have Paul, who will stick with you, they will pretty much always be there. But for me, a lot of the people that I've had an affinity with are exactly the people who aren't going to hang around and who aren't going to be there. So it's, I don't know, swings and roundabouts for me. And I appreciate people who see this as a great new opportunity to, you know, get back with old people, learn new things, rediscover themselves. But it's whether the game's going to be able to support that in 6 months' time. And the muttering is already started in various places. And I'm listening to people talking about, well, you know, is this going to happen in 6 months? Are people still going to be logging into their garrisons every day? Is this going to sustain long-term development? Is raiding going to be as good as it needs to be? All these things are already there, because they were actually issued before we even came into the expansion. Because these are the long-term concerns of players over time. Blizzard perennially reinvents themselves at the start of each expansion, and it gives us a new set of possibilities to consider. Are these possibilities going to be sufficient to continue the development and continue an upward movement of subscribers? And then we're going to go into Q1 next year, and we're going to look at those Q1 numbers. If those numbers keep going up, then I think Blizzard can actually turn around and say that they've been successful. But this period, 6 months that we've had, where you've come in by your own admission, not on the back of the game, but on the back of something about the game, the way it used to be, not the way it is now. Lots and lots of people are feeding on a wave of nostalgia, which is eventually going to dry up, probably on and around January the 4th, as it happens. And when that happens, then we have to take a step back, and then we have to see where we are.
Yeah, I mean, and I am not surprised. This has been one of the largest expansion bumps they've experienced, because this is also the most nostalgia-laden expansion. I mean, Wrath was full of nostalgia if you played the RTS, but this is the first expansion that we've really gotten that is nostalgia-targeting WoW players.
Well, it also is going to come down, I think, because it won't happen over Christmas, but at some point in January, somebody is going to turn around and say, well, what's next then? What are you doing now? Because, you know, we won't get, you know, there won't be any hints of what's going to get patched, what we're going to see. But the first time you're going to see that is probably first week in January.
Well, that's honestly what concerns me, is during the time from April to November, my guild got rather good at content. Like, all of a sudden, because when I came back, it was the week before Warlord's launch, they offered to run me through Heroic Siege of Orgrimmar so I could get my heirloom weapon. And they straight rolled the content like it was the easiest thing in the world.
So when you give people a year,
yeah, exactly.
They do one of two things: they either fuck off and leave it be, or they get good. And there is now a situation where there are going to be more people going into Highmoor next week than I suspect was ever considered possible at the beginning of the year. But what this does mean is that the expectation curve has moved quite considerably upwards, and I'd say it. Every day when I log in, or every day when I sit down in front of the computer to write, one of the first things I do is go to Wowhead, because, well, post face it, it's the de facto place now for me to go. If there's anything going on, I want to know about it. And when you watch the way that news has kind of slowed to a trickle on Wowhead, insofar as, you know, we don't need data mining anymore, it's all there. You can start creating guides now, which is what they're doing, but really there is nothing for them to do. So if you use them as the benchmark, the place where everybody looks and goes, you know, nothing's going on in this game. Now, you would say, oh, you don't need anything to go on. You know, we're still in the first X month. I told you, people aren't thinking that. People aren't thinking that it's nearly a month. They're feeling as if the way it was all stacked up beforehand and the way we had this constant assault of new things and what was coming and what we were going to see, they have dug themselves a very big trench, which is going to be quite difficult for them to get out of if we don't start getting new news very quickly. Because as soon as these bosses are overtaken and as soon as these bosses are defeated, and I would think with World First Guilds, we are looking before the end of December, then everybody is going to start asking, well, what's next? And that, for me, with my kind of large worldview hat on, is where I'm sitting now, and I'm thinking, you know what? Come on, want to see what's going to happen. And I guarantee you that, you know, next week, there's meetings already going on in Blizzard. There's people sitting down and talking this out and going, we need to be ready. We need to go. This all needs to be prepared, and we need to be ready to do what's next. And that is what's going to make the expansion, not this first 6 months that we've had.
That's going to determine whether or not the players stick around, because traditionally that has been the weak part of World of Warcraft, is that the content is very slow to release. When you have games like Final Fantasy XIV that are releasing a minor patch every month and a major patch every 3 months, and you know, there are other games out there that are doing a similar release schedule, at least having something bumping the content every month to say, here's something new for you to do. And I think the other challenge is, when Naxxramas was released, the original Naxxramas, roughly 3% of the population ever set foot in Naxx at the correct level. I would say roughly 60%, if not higher, now do raid content, because they've lowered the barrier of entry with LFR. And I am not one of those players that says LFR is a bad thing. I think it's a brilliant thing. Like, it allows me to see the content, it allows me to see the story without the commitment of, you know, having to go find a raid group for my alts. But I still think that at the end of the day, what's going to make or break this expansion is if they can improve their speed at which they're delivering content.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And I think that how they then present that in the long term, because I know there's an article floating around that I think got released last week, which I think was PC Gamer, which I think it's Alex Afriasi saying that garrisons are an expansion deal, pretty much sitting and going, right, no, we're not. This is just for Warlords. We don't know what we're going to do next. And I personally feel that the way that they use this every time, it is pretty much every time, as a way to try and find something new to bring in players. The long-term goal of this game has been very, very vague in certain areas. What it seems to do now is it just seems to be recycling the same basic storyline. You know, we attack the Legion attacks us. We attack the Legion attacks us. And it is pretty much this kind of, you know, two factions, a limited selection of bad guys, which everybody knows or not. And going back to a past that doesn't actually exist, but does now, and making this into a multiverse. For a long time, I was very, very disappointed with whoever it thought that this was a good idea. And I've made no bones about this. And the way they've done it has been very clever and has been very sensibly placed and pitched for maximizing remembrance of times past, but making it sufficiently new and interesting that people will want to pursue it. Now, how they then take this forward afterwards, it becomes very interesting indeed, because theoretically speaking, all the major events that we've already played out have not played out in the timeline that we're in. So we could theoretically go through the whole thing again, right up to the point where the past diverges with the present, and we go back yet again, maybe a third time, and start the whole process over. Now, that to me smacks, I have to say, of a lack of imagination. And there will be those who will argue that, you know, if you're playing a computer game like this, you know, lack of imagination is not something you should be critical of. But I don't know. I really don't know. And if I had to sit and you sort of wanted to pin me down about how we are going to proceed, now we're actually here and now I've seen it all and I've experienced it pretty much once through, I can't help feeling that I've missed something. It's almost as if, you know, I've read this story. This story has been given to me. I've been given the book and I've gone through it once and I've put the book down and I'm looking at the book and I'm thinking, what did I miss? This doesn't make sense. What is missing here? And there is something basic that I am missing. Now, of course, the way the storyline goes is that stuff will be filled in over time. And obviously, as we go to raids and stuff, backstory will filter into place. But I just cannot help but feel that something isn't correct in the whole setup. Now, it's because I look at the plot and I look at the storyline. I don't look at the people I'm playing with. I don't look at the achievements I'm getting in that regard. I tend to look at it actually as a plot line. And this is my equivalent of having watched a whole season and having got to the big bad at the end. And well, how exactly did they become the big bad? Precisely, how does this work? And there are the sort of mounting number of questions that are appearing in my head, which I can't really answer. And I found myself, well, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to go and play my garrison. And I don't know how any other long-term gaming franchises work. I've never played Mass Effect. No, I haven't. I storylines like that, the self-contained ones I love, but the long kind of storytelling epics, I try not to get involved in because I just get lost. And I feel very lost right now in terms of how this is panning out. And if you asked me to comment on the lore, I would probably take a step back and say no, not yet, until I actually know what's going on. So I'm hoping when Heimel appears next week, some kind of background is going to be provided for me, and I'm going to be able to sit down and I'm going to be able to put it in context. But for now, I am not looking at that part of the game at all with any kind of critical or active eye.
I kind of see what you mean, because during the playthrough of the game, there were three characters that I expected to factor heavily into the final story, all three of which were disposed of with relatively little circumstance. And now I'm left with, I'm not sure where we're going. Like, I have no clue where things are going now.
It's I don't like being the person who puts their hand up and goes, excuse me, I think you've missed something. Or, excuse me, what does this mean? And inevitably, I end up doing it because I have to see it. I explained earlier, I look at everything. I take an overall view of what's going on around me, and I need all the facts to sort of come to a conclusion. And there is just, yes, it's great, compelling quest line. And yes, there's some really cool stuff that happens in it, but just no. There is something here that I feel is missing. And Blizzard are particularly poor, I feel, at expecting players to go and do their own homework. I always work on the theory, and I will keep saying this until I'm blue in the face, that if you want something, to put it in the game, don't get somebody to write a book about it. Because if you're expecting people to go and read your backstory, you are doing it wrong. Nobody makes a movie and then says, oh, you need to go and read these two books so it makes sense. That's not how it works. Okay, maybe you read the books and you go and see the movies that are adapted from the books and they make less sense. But then you go and read the books because then you have the background to them. That's fine if your original source is written word. This isn't. The original source is a game. It should all be in the game, and it isn't. And I just sense that we've got something coming that's going to happen, and there's going to be lots of people going, WTF is going on? I suspect I will be one of them.
So one of the interesting things, speaking of you collecting lots of information and to make your own decisions about things, and this is a horrible segue, but the 10 years of WoW project that you embarked on, that's a quite big challenge. Did you expect the turnout that you got on that?
No, I didn't. And I feel quite guilty currently because I've only just got to a stage in the last week or so where I'm actually in a position to start doing anything with it, because I've kind of suffered the mother of all technical failures earlier in sort of late October, early November, and it's taken me 3 weeks to get back to where I was. I've lost quite a lot of stuff. Stuff's been corrupted, so I've been kind of picking bits up and putting bits together. It was impressive to see the number of people who took up the challenge, and I think the documentary showed that people are interested in nostalgia. Nostalgia is a great currency currently. And I hope that I can do justice eventually to what people have given me. And I will. It will happen. It's just going to take slightly longer than I thought it was. I'd kind of planned to be ready to go and maybe have everything done by the end of December. But I think I'm probably going to be bleeding over into January now. But it's not a big deal. I still have great plans for getting it all organized and getting it all finished. So.
I can't fathom the sheer volume of stuff that you're going to have to edit through to cherry pick the items that you want to focus on.
It's cause... not about what I want. It's about what people have said. And that's the key here. It isn't me deciding necessarily what... See, a good documentary isn't you pushing it in the right direction. A good documentary is the storytelling itself. And that's always the case. And finding... the sort of the commonality, the key is just is picking the road, and the road actually is quite clear with people, and there are certain stories that are very common in lots of people's collective unconsciousness, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a path, a common path for everybody, because this isn't just about picking out, you know, the heart-wrenching or the pressing or the funny or the sad. This is about finding a route that everybody has traveled in one way or another, and finding a way to link everything together. And that actually is not as difficult as maybe it first looks. I mean, the problem becomes is the sheer amount of raw information that you have to deal with. But I've been looking at this journey for quite a long time. I'm well aware of the stops along the way, and I'm very well versed in a different kind of stories that occur in that 10-year period. So that's not the issue. The issue isn't me finding an angle I'm happy with. The key is to make sure that the path that I pick is the one that's most worn by everybody.
I'm sure it'll be amazing. Your stuff has always had this amazing NPR quality to it.
Oh, sure.
It's great. Like, I mean...
Stop it.
You arrive at a level of quality that I can't even hope to come up with, because it always sounds so polished and so smooth.
Well, I'm not doing it. I have to say, I refuse to do this unless I can do it on my own terms. And that's been the same with everything in my life. And frankly, I want people to be able to decide whether they want to listen to it or not. I know how podcasting works for a lot of people, and the organic way of doing things is great, but I do not actually feel comfortable physically with doing that. And I think it is the OCD in me that makes me think, you know what, I have to have this planned because I know how bad I sound when I ramble. How bad I sound when I'm not focusing myself deliberately on doing something. And I think some of the best podcasting I've done with other people is when I've actually gone in with a script and stuck to it. Because for me, otherwise I just get kind of caught on eddies and currents and disappear off on tangents, and it just makes no sense. So it's because I feel the need to come up with something that gives what I want it to give in the shortest time possible. And I love being able to ramble. I know certain people love listening to conversational stuff like this, but I find it very difficult to cope with. I tend to kind of get lost and I need sort of foci. And that's my argument. That's my modus operandi there. I just do it because I need to be able to keep everything under control. And for me, it's just a sign of, you know, if I've done a good job, I can come in under 5 minutes. If I've done a really good job, I can do it in 15. I don't need half an hour. If I need half an hour, then I should be doing something else. So it's just kind of, you know, time periods and me understanding where I am in relation to myself, if you get what I mean.
Well, it comes off as so smooth and polished, and I'm sure that's in part why your podcasting has been so popular and why you're so cherished in our community, is because you present this clear front.
Statue or a fine piece of china. No. I'm terrible at taking compliments.
Well, you should probably get used to it, because I'm sure I am not the first person to compliment you.
Yeah, no, it's just so many people do so much good work in different ways, and I just like to not be kind of, I've always hated being center of attention, but you know, for years and years. You do what you do because you feel comfortable about doing it. And I've always said to myself that if I can't make it so that I'm happy with it, then I won't do it. And that's sort of the way it's been. And that's why I'm kind of not as perhaps as prolific as some people, because I do tend to sit down some weeks and think, no, I can't do this. It's just not going to work. You're going to tell that I'm lying through my teeth and I'm not going to do that. And it becomes kind of quite difficult to sometimes to stick on a schedule as a result. But you're very kind. Thank you very much. It's just a thing. There's lots of things. I some days would far rather be better than at kind of coping as a grown up than doing all this. Kind of, you know, this trade off, sort of having two kids is sometimes really, really hard work. And I know people are really nice about what I do here, but I kind of wish that I could just, you know, make that work in the rest of my life with the same kind of consistency. That would be great.
So I have to ask, since you brought this up, did you create notes for this conversation? Since you like to have things scripted out and controlled.
There may be notes, yes. sorry. I hate to sort of break this to everybody, but for your own benefit, you know, emergency exits are located here, here, and here. You know, in the event of this podcast landing on water, it's that way. I like to have everything, you know, I like to sort of think things through. And it's only when I become very, very comfortable with somebody, or I've known them for quite a long time, that I can sort of throw the script away. But for the rest of you people, it really is worthwhile. Trust me. really, you ought to know me when I'm not here. And it does. It makes a huge difference.
So one of the questions that I've been asking a lot of people, what are you afraid of? What fears you, either, and it doesn't have to be gaming related, but what are you most afraid of in the world, gaming or otherwise?
Stupidity.
That seems to be rampant.
Well, this is... I have a 14-year-old son and I have a soon be 10. And when people ask me what worries me about their future, I could sit here and I could, you know, list you 101 different things. But at the end of the day, although we joke about me and my scripts and thinking about stuff and organizing things, the ability to just not think is so incredibly depressing. It is unbelievable. And as an individual, if you ask me what, you know, I can do nothing about 95% of the world. I can put, no, actually probably not. 99% of the world I can do nothing about. The 1% I do have at least some sway on I feel really ought to be paying more attention to what they do, how they do it, and how they treat other people. And that's all down to stupid in one form or another. So although, you know, I could go run out into deep dark fears, of which there are many, the overriding one is just utter stupidity. And there is so much of it currently. Just have to look at Twitter in any 5-minute period normally. It's not difficult to think, but it's not easy either. And as a result of that, I think that a lot of people, especially on the internet, where it appears that nobody else thinks, which is completely untrue, hate to break this to you folks, you just switch your brain off. And I will freely admit, very little time for anybody who thinks that treating people like dirt is cool because they can't see you.
Well, and that's always been one of the things I struggle with, is there are certain people in the world that I am just pixels to. Like, I am just pixels on a screen, and I am not a real person. I am just a website they read, or I am just a whatever they're reducing me to. And I just can't view the world like that. I mean, people are people to me. Like, you know, you are a person. I care about you as a person, not because of the things you do or because of the things that you give to me or that benefit me. You know, so I care about people. Like, I fundamentally, like, when someone is having a bad day, I care about that they're having a bad day.
I just think some people don't grasp the world like that generally. I don't think the internet is a restriction to that. I just think those people just don't get it. And I think there's a phenomenal number of people in the world who are exactly like that. For whatever reason, whether it's just easier to just cope with what you're doing yourself and not have a view of the bigger picture, or just generally because you don't get it. But at the end of the day, and I'm quite hot on this now, you turn up on my timeline and you start a fight, you're going to get one, and then you're going to be off. And I refuse to have anybody come along and you know, make it anything other than what it should be, which is fair, honest, equal, and open. Anybody who comes to any party that I happen to be a part of and will not ascribe to those points of view, really, don't be surprised if I don't talk to you, is what I will say. And I know people think, no, I'm willing and prepared to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But if, and I can think of one extremely notable example, if you decide that what I feel on my point of view by being open and trying to see a bigger picture isn't something you want to do and you're going to shut me out, don't be surprised if I make fuss about it before I leave. Because I am not the kind of person, it has to be said, that will lie down and take things. If somebody pushes me, I will push back. Now, the difference over the years has been that you know the point where you stop. You know where you should walk away. But I have, in memory in the last month, had people who have decided, oh, let's just give her a push and see where she goes. Just don't. You can't be a decent human being. Why are you bothering? It's not hard.
Well, and my thing has always been that, you know, we don't all have to be friends and we don't all have to share the same viewpoint, but please, can we all just treat each other with, you know, some basic respect?
Frankly, no. And that is what it boils down to now. And, it you know, you say it in a kind of, you say it like that and you still have people just saying, no, not good, sorry, this is more fun. Winding you up is more fun. Well, fuck you. Excuse my French.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. And yeah, I mean, and I find myself not having any use for those sort of people. The ones that are purposely looking to inflict harm in others.
Yes, and there are an increasing number of them who don't actually realise the consequences of what they're doing, which is going to be fun when legislation catches up with them, which it will. I'm quite looking forward to seeing how that works. There's a notable story over in the UK recently, a woman who was attempting to get a female, I can't remember whether it was the £20 note or the £50 note. Our currency, traditionally on the back of it, has notable historical figures. And there was a woman trying to get another woman on the back of a £50 or £20 note, and she was trolled fairly strongly by a couple of people. And a prosecution was sought, and it was successful, and the two people concerned were convicted for internet trolling, And one of the two involved, which is a woman, which is also quite telling, I think. This woman's now doing the rounds of schools and colleges in the UK, highlighting people in schools as to the disadvantages of being an internet troll and how it can actually ruin your life. And I find it interesting that, first of all, it's a woman who did this, you know, because mostly I think women think it's men and men think it's women, and they don't kind of, you know, realise that there aren't these basic arguments that play a lot of the time. It's just people being dicks without, you know, no disrespect to your particular genitalia being used in this context, but you understand what I mean. You know?
Our number two guild rule is don't be a dick. Like, yeah, that's literally our number two guild rule.
It just works, okay? Yes.
It works.
Male or female, yes, you can be a dick, and you just don't do this. And just, no. Lots of people, because this woman's excuse, and, you know, the excuse she used in court was, I'm sorry, you know, I was drunk, and I sat there, and I typed this stuff out drunk and didn't realise what I was doing. And I just... look skyward and think of the number of people who will just, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was saying. And if you open your mouth and words come out, I'm sitting here and doing it now. I would not be happy to do an interview like this unless I was prepared to stand by every word that I said. And people, once you start becoming public, have a duty of care, not simply to themselves, but to everybody else that they speak to. And I think a lot of people who are, quote, minor internet celebrities, unquote, don't grasp this. If you want to have a persona that makes you an irritable fuckwit, fine. That's perfectly acceptable. But then you are going to get some baggage along the way, and there are going to be consequences for your actions. Everything has a consequence. And once people accept this, life becomes far easier for everybody. But most people don't grasp that. Basic fact that when you press tweet or when you press publish, you're not just putting it on your computer. The world can see it. And once you get that, things suddenly fall into place with a great deal more speed. And it's quite easy to understand how you could upset people to start with.
Okay, to ask the bookend question, what gives you hope?
My daughter turning around to me and telling me that when she grows up, she wants to ride dragons. She loves How to Train Your Dragon 2. She's a huge fan of the movies. And part of her still wants to ride dragons. And you know what? I wouldn't mind doing that either. And I think just the possibility of knowing that you have a chance with kids to let them keep dreams and aspirations like that, even if, you know, the rest of the world grinds them into the ground. Those little moments of awesome. I'm going to give you an example, actually a personal example. Last podcast, which is currently available on my website, is me admitting to everybody that there was a point in the opening weekend of Warlords when I decided that I could jack it all in, and I might. Couldn't play, couldn't get involved in playing, was getting grief from my husband, was listening to grief from other people, and thought, you know what? I don't want to hear this. I could go and do something else. I could do any other things than this, and really, I don't need it. And there was this kind of hours worth of just sitting there thinking, you know what? Screw it. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. I can just go and do something else, and I don't need to write about it, and it's done. And being honest about it, and telling everybody that I felt like this on my podcast, and I did this, and I got more mail in that 24-hour period subsequent to that podcast than I've ever got at any point in all the times that I've been podcasting. And everybody who wrote to me, to a person, was exactly the same way. There were people that weekend who couldn't log on, who think to themselves, well, let's go do something else. We don't need this. We don't need to be, you know, being controlled, and we don't need to think like this. And I just found myself realizing that I'm not on my own. And hope is understanding that what you want is not impossible, I think. And for me, I think we can get to a stage where everybody gets a fair crack at the equality whip. I think I can get to a stage where people who would tell me to fuck off now could be persuaded to just tell me to go away. I think that people can be reasoned with. I feel that change is possible in all different areas, politically and socially. Enough people have to want it to make it happen. I think that what gives me hope currently in the particular sphere that I'm in is that when I speak now, people do listen. And that means that maybe if I talk about things, things may change. And that's encouraging. That's really very encouraging. And I hope that if enough women and enough, quote, minority people, unquote, without being unfair to anybody, and they all know who they are, if we all have something that we need to change, if we talk about it, if we're sensible and we reason about it, it could happen. It's not just feminism. It's not just lesbian and gay rights. It's not just transgender. It's not any of this. It's everybody who feels that it shouldn't just be black and white anymore, that everybody who has something to say should be listened to. Now, if that all changes, then yes, we're getting somewhere. And maybe then that means my daughter does get to ride her dragons, and maybe I get to ride them with her. That, I think, would make me very happy indeed.
Well, and that's been the frustrating part of being in the gaming world for the last few months, is that I've seen things that I just take as positives and that I take as being a good human being to other human beings taken as some sort of a negative. You know, like I don't know if you caught the thing from the other day, but I have ended up on a list with like 6,700 or 67,000 other people for supposedly being, you know, a bad person and wanting, you know, basic human rights for everyone. And I can't see that as a horrible thing. And my thought is that if you have to create a list to block, you know, almost 60,000 people to keep your point of view, then there's something fundamentally flawed with your point of view.
I've spoken on various podcasts on this over the last 6 months ago, 6 months or so, and I think what really brought it home to me was that somebody whose blog I absolutely adore, somebody who I utterly and totally respected, turned around and blocked me a couple of weeks ago because I brought this particular argument to their front door and they didn't want it. And they decided that they weren't going to, you know, entertain this. So the easiest way to deal with it was just pretend I didn't exist. So with you, I completely understand that some people just don't cope with change well. Some people just don't want change. Now, these people will die out. They will become extinct. That's what evolution is all about. And if finally the development of this race on this planet is that equality and fairness is what actually wills out, it will go one of two ways. Either that happens or we cease to exist as a human race. So the choice is very simple for people. If the only way you can deal with the world is keeping it as a version of how you feel it should be, you are doing it wrong. The way to deal with it is to embrace everything. And if people can't embrace everything, well, they're lost.
Well, and back to the riding dragons statement, there's something that gets lost as we become adults. There's a childlike wonder that kids have that embrace everything put in front of them. And someone, and I honestly don't even remember who it was at this point, made some comment about, you know, that we need to be more childlike in our enjoyment of the things that we do for fun. And it stuck home with me that, you know, I was being way more negative than I ever should about things that are supposed to be fun. So I've tried really hard to view everything that I'm doing through the lenses of, you know, that childlike wonder.
Well, you asked me why I get so passionate about the game. There's your answer. I refuse to live my life like that. I know what it's like when you do that, and it's miserable as hell. It really is. It just drags everybody down with you, and there is a spiral of self-loathing and self-doubt that then accompanies that, which is, frankly, somewhere you don't ever want to go. Having dealt with depression over many years, you get to a point where you have a fairly stark choice. You have to decide whether you live or you don't. And being able to sort of grasp the wonder of things, the simplicity of things, is possibly the best way you can ever go forward in trying to redefine what you are. And I think for a lot of people, it becomes self-defeating sometimes. You know, you can't get out of the bad position you're in, and it kind of multiplies in itself and it gets deeper and darker. Just sanity in small doses, moments of calm, places where you can be just what you are without having to worry about other people. Some people have to put up walls to do that. Some people have to block out the rest of the world to do that. You live your life the way you need to live it to survive. And whether you're on a list with 60,000 other people, or whether you're blocked by 60,000 people, or whether you just don't listen, it doesn't matter. This is the coping mechanism that people have. And I cope most days when I don't, going back to the basic principle that look at everything as if it's the first time you've ever looked at it, is actually a very useful way of moving the world to fit better around what you want rather than what it actually is. It is hard and difficult and painful doing this, but as should be pointed out, you get one go at life. And if you are going to sit there and just pretend lots of it doesn't happen, then you are frankly missing out.
And I think that might be a good point to taper things off, because that's a great point to leave on. At this point, we've run a little over an hour. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Be better tomorrow than you are now is the one thing that was given to me by somebody, which is a good way of just keeping yourself pointing in the right direction. That however good you thought you were today, tomorrow you could be better. And it's a nice little metaphor for life, because as I like to say to people, every day is a school day. You may have left, but you're still learning. And to learn well is always difficult, and it can always be fought. But if you've done well, don't leave it like that. Go tomorrow and try and improve on where you were, and every day then becomes a step forward.
Well, Alt, I am very happy to have had you agree to have a conversation with me.
Well, and yeah, you asked nicely, and you know, well, I'm not going to say no. Of course, I'm not. Can I thank you very much for having me. This is not something that I normally do with people. I tend to ramble and go off on tangents, but it's been very nice just to sit and talk about bigger issues than kind of. Well, garrisons, actually. The last one I've seen from Dan has spoken about garrisons and nothing else. So,
yeah, I purposely wasn't going to ask you about garrisons, because you have done so much about garrisons that, yeah, you probably go to sleep and see garrisons.
I've had some very interesting dreams, and for a small fee, I'd be willing to share those with people. They have been very entertaining and rather bizarre in places. But yes, I appreciate just being able to talk rather than, you know, having a subject matter to sort of get tied around. So thank you very much.
Well, I think we had a great conversation in spite of not really having a plan before we started.
It's all right. Sometimes I hear not having a plan's okay.
Yeah. That's kind of my entire life. I roll with the punches. But anyway, thank you so much for joining me, and I am hoping you had a good time, and I am hoping our listeners will enjoy this. And I will pick another victim in about a month's time. See you guys later. Good night. So that was a really enjoyable conversation with Alternative Chat. And I got wrapped up in the conversation and forgot to have her plug her own stuff. So if you are looking for her content, check her out on alternative-blog.net, where she posts daily. And she posts semi-weekly podcast. And you can also check her out on azeroth5.blogspot.com, where she distills the news of Azeroth in 5 minutes. You can also follow her on Twitter at alternativechat, one word. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you when we record the next Bell Folks stuff. Thank you.